ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Text Number 24. Nakameye natha tadapeham kvachin Nayatra yusmacharnam bhujasvaha महात्मान्तार हृदयान् मुकर्चुतो विधत्स्वकर्णायुतमेशमे वरा न कामये नाथा तदपेहं क्वचिन् न यत्र युष्माच्चरणाम्भुजस्वः महात्मान्तर्हृदयान्मुखच्युतो विधत्स्वकर्णायुतमेशमेवरा न कामये नाथ तदपेहं क्वचिन् न यत्र युष्माच्चरणाम्भुजस्वः महात्मान्तर्हृदयान्मुखच्युतो विधत्स्वकर्णायुतमेशमेव। No? No. Not. Kamae. Do I desire? Natha. Oh Master. Tat. That. Api. Even. Aham. I. Kwachit. At that time. Na. Not. Yatra. Where? Yatra. It was actually Yatra. Where? Yusmat. Your charanam bhuja at the lotus feet, aswa the nectarian beverage, mahatama of the great devotees, anta hridayat from the core of the heart, mukha from the mouth, chuta being delivered, vidhatsva give, karana is, ayutam 1,000,000, esha, this, me, mine, vara, benediction. Translation paper flash to Prabhupada. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence, a benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I want the benediction of at least 1,000,000 years. For thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. Purport. In the previous verse, Maharaj Parikshit addressed the Lord as Kaivalyapati, the master of the liberation of merging into his existence. This does not mean that he was anxious for Kaivalya liberation. That is made clear in this verse. My dear Lord, I do not want such liberation. Maharaj Prithu wanted to have 1,000,000 years to hear the glories of the lotus feet of the Lord. He specifically mentioned that the glories of the Lord should emanate from the mouths of pure devotees who speak from the core of their hearts. It is stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam in 1.13, Sukha Mukhat Amrita Dravya Sanyutam. The nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam became more relishable because it emanated from the mouth of Srila Sukha Goswami. One might think that this glories of the Lord can be heard from anywhere, from the mouths of either devotees or non-devotees. But here it is specifically mentioned that the glories of the Lord must emanate from the mouths of pure devotees. Sri Sanatana Goswami has strictly prohibited hearing from the mouths of non-devotees. There are many professional reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam who speak the narrations very ornamentally, but a pure devotee does not like to hear from them because such glorification of the Lord is simply a vibration of material sound. But when heard from the mouth of pure devotee, glorification of the Lord is immediately effective. The words Satam Prasangam Mama Virya Samvita Bhagavatam 3.25.25 mean that glorification of the Lord is potent when uttered from the mouth of pure devotee. The Lord has innumerable devotees all over the universe, and they have been glorifying the Lord since time immemorial and for an unlimited time. But they still cannot completely finish enumerating the glories of the Lord. Prithu Maharaj therefore wanted innumerable years, as Rupa Goswami also desired to have millions of years and millions of tongues to chant and hear the glorification of the Lord. In other words, it is our ears. If our ears are always engaged in hearing the glorification of the Lord, there will be no scope for hearing the Mayavad philosophy, which is doomed for spiritual progress. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if anyone hears from the Mayavadi philosopher preaching about the activities of the Lord, even if it is a description for the Vedic literature, he is ultimately doomed. By hearing such Mayavada philosophy, one cannot come to the destination of spiritual perfection of life. Om Ajnanati Vinandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Pashyatyadesatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna, today we will discuss a little bit overview of how this particular episode of the Bhagavatam fits into the total scheme of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the first part. And in second part, we will discuss about the episode itself, which is being narrated by Maitreya Muni about Maharaj Prithu. And time permitting, at the back end, we will discuss a little bit about Sri Ramanujacharya, because it's his disappearance there today as well. So there, in other words, we have got three parts for 45 minutes. So, little bit of overview of how this fits in, how this text fits into the overall context. Srimad Bhagavatam, as we all know, is a very nested conversation. When we say nested, what we mean is that there are conversations within conversations. Srimad Bhagavatam is not necessarily in a chronological order, from time to time to time. It is more about stories, highlighting real stories, real pastimes, to highlight bhakti. So, if we take a few steps back, Srimad Bhagavatam, at the very outset, as the most outer layer, if you like, is the conversation between Vyasadeva and us. Because Vyasadeva is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to us. So the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam starts with Srila Vyasadeva speaking. And the last verse of the Bhagavatam also ends with Srila Vyasadeva speaking. In between there are more conversations. But let's again take more steps back regarding why Srila Vyasadeva wants to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to us. Srila Vyasadeva, as we know, is the incarnation of Krishna himself, he is Lord himself. And him being a Trikaldrashi, Trikaldrashi means one who could see the past, present and future. being able to see the future into the Kali Yuga, which is the present moment, he saw that the people of Kali Yuga will be big time struggling, and we can relate to it. No? They will have a lot of defects, and they will have no solutions in mind. So seeing the faults and the defects in the Kali Yuga mentality of the people, he saw initially he saw, you know, the Vedic sacrifices, the atonements given in the Vedas as their remedy, as the solution for the suffering souls of Kali Yuga. So seeing those remedies in Vedic sacrifices as the solution, out of his compassion for the welfare of the suffering humanity, he divided the Vedas into four, which we already know, and he also expanded on certain sections of the Vedas to make it a little more simpler for us to understand. So having seen the problems in Kali Yuga, and after giving the remedy as the Vedic sacrifices, the Vedic atonements, and after extending and simplifying the Vedas, he was still not satisfied. He still felt dissatisfaction in himself. So that led to him being introspective, you know, he introspected to say what could be the cause of my dissatisfaction. And then he got the realization that perhaps the reason for my despondency is because I have failed to glorify the glories of the Supreme Lord. I have failed to glorify abundantly, you know, the glories of the Supreme Lord. So with that realization, Narad Muni immediately appears on the scene. And as we know, you know, Narad Muni is always there when, you know, the pure devotee needs him. So Narad Muni then confirms to Srila Vyasa that your introspection is correct. And Narad Muni tells Vyasa that there is two defects in your writing. In your writing of Vedas, there are two defects. Firstly, that you have not abundantly broadcasted the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have not broadcasted the glories of Lord in abundant way. You know, it's just here and there, but not that. It's not that explicit. Second defect is that you have put too much emphasis in your Vedas regarding the four Purusha Arthas. What are the four Purusha Arthas? Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. There is too much mentioning of Dharma, Karma, Artha, Dharma, Kama, Artha, and Moksha, but there is not too much emphasis on Bhakti, which is the main point. So having get this corrective measures, if you like, now, from Narad Muni, Vyasadeva then sits down to write Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this Bhagavatam, when we see, now there is focus at any point in time regarding Bhakti. Bhakti unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Dharma, Kama, Artha, and Moksha are there, you know, not as a matter of understanding, but Bhakti is the main focal point of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, Bhagavatam starts with Vyasadeva speaking to us about Bhakti. Now, within the first chapters of Bhagavatam in Canto 1, immediately, you know, the narration tends to Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. So Vyasadeva starts, but then there is a second nested conversation between Sutta Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya. And those sages are headed by Saunaka Rishi, asking a lot of questions to Sutta Goswami. As the Bhagavatam further evolves and unfolds, we see that there is a discussion between Sukhdeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, which happened at the time of Maharaj Parikshit preparing for his death. If you all don't know. So that's the third layer of conversation. Now the fourth layer of conversation, which also starts somewhere, you know, in the third quarter of Canto 3 and all of Canto 4, which is what we are reading at the moment, Canto 4, is a discussion between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. And that's what we are reading. So just to recap, you know, Bhagavatam nested conversations in between Vyasadeva and us at the outer circumference. Then there is Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. Then there is Sukhdeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. And then there is Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura, which is what we are reading at the moment. And why is Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura? Again, a couple of steps back. Vidura, when he was kind of chased away, no, from Hastinapur by Duryodhan, and we know that pastime. So being, you know, being chased from his own house, when he goes to the Himalaya, you know, after him going through his science of self-realization, Vidura approaches Uddhava to tell him about bhakti. Why? Because Uddhava had heard about bhakti from Krishna himself. So Maitreya Muni wanted that relay of the conversation or the instructions that Krishna has given to Uddhava. Now Uddhava at this stage, when he sees Narad Muni in the Himalayas, he, from a biological point of view, kind of is reluctant to preach to Vidura, because they were relatives. You know, so out of respect for the senior person, he did not want to speak. So he guided Maitreya Muni to say, Uddhava guided Vidura to say, when I was hearing all these glories about bhakti from Krishna, sitting in that assembly was Maitreya Muni. So therefore I suggest you go in here from Maitreya Muni, and that is what we are discussing at the moment. The Fool of Canto 4 is a discussion between Vidura and Maitreya Muni. So, if you see Bhagavatam, you know, just to recap all that from yesterday's point of view, generally there are three causes of the problems that we suffer. Our cause of suffering is due to three problems, or three causes if you like. There is an immediate cause, there is a remote cause, and there is an ultimate cause. For example, if we are suffering from malaria, the immediate cause is that we have been bitten by mosquito. That's the immediate cause. The remote cause is that it is our karma coming back to us. We are suffering because of our prarabdha or aprarabdha karma. Some karma that we have done in the previous life, so in this life, is now coming back and biting us. That's the remote cause. The ultimate cause of all sufferings is forgetfulness of Krishna. Because we have forgotten Krishna, these sufferings are coming. So, if you look at Vyasadeva's strategy in writing Vedas, he was attacking the immediate and the remote cause. If you are suffering, go and fix your karma. And if the impact of the karma is coming onto you, you can reduce it or nullify it through some Vedic atonements. So two layers of fixing the problem. Whereas what Srimad Bhagavatam does, you know, being guided by Narad Muni, Srila Vyasadeva goes immediately into the root and the ultimate cause of all the problems. And the root and the ultimate cause of all the problems is forgetfulness of Krishna. So there is Krishna on every pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just remember Krishna, life will be okay. Just remember Krishna, life will be okay. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. No? That's the ultimate solution to all the problems. So, regarding this canto, no, little bit about this canto before we zoom into this particular episode again. Canto 4 is a very rich canto. All the pages of Bhagavatam are very rich, but canto 4 is very, very interesting. Why? Because excuse me, it is something that as neophyte devotees, we should be very easily be able to relate to. It resonates with our own development of Krishna consciousness, our own growth of Krishna consciousness. Why? Because it is rich with pastimes of personalities, both from a positive point of view and also from a negative point of view. When in our lives, when we have to learn something, there are things that we learn the right way and continue to do the right things. And you will all agree with me perhaps, you know, that there are also a lot of things that we have done wrong in our life, and then there are lessons to be learned from those failures. So, Canto 4 teaches us about personalities who have done the right thing that, you know, at the right time, at the right way, so learn from those. And also, you know, we can learn from the bad experiences of those devotees who were not so favorable to Krishna consciousness. And a very interesting thing happens in these cases, and I'll now name those personalities soon. In the cases of personalities who did mistakes, big mistakes in their life on their path of, you know, devotional service, or if they were not probably even favorable to Krishna consciousness, an intervention, you know, by a devotee led to the transformation of their heart. In all these cases, It was the intervention of a devotee which led to the transformation of their heart. So therefore, in our lives, we learn from positives, we learn from negatives, and when we are going through a negative time, or negative behavior, or a negative character, it's very important to get intervened by a devotee, by the spiritual master, by a mentor, by a Siksha Guru, so that there can be corrective measures implemented immediately, no? Without us slipping down more and more. So what am I talking about? They are, in this canto, canto 4, they are admirable personalities, you know, like Lord Shiva. We see that coming across in the Lord Shiva and Daksha pastime, you know. We saw his behavior, how to deal with Daksha. Then we saw, of course, Dhruva Maharaj pastime, you know, how to be determined. Then we saw the pastime of King Anga, you know, how he was a righteous leader, you know, a ruler. Then, of course, at the moment we are seeing about the pastimes of King Prithu, you know, how to be again, you know, an exemplary leader, Raj Rishi. Then we saw in this canto, and we are continuing to see as the canto unfolds, the unfavorable attitudes towards devotional services from personalities like Daksha, you know, how he was caught with too much pride, which led to his anger, which led to his fall. Then we saw the mistakes made by Suruchi, you know, who is Dhruva's stepmother, you know, how she was speaking very harshly with Dhruva. Then we saw the mistakes made by King Vena, who is the son of Anga, you know, how he was a tyrant leader. And then at the moment we are seeing the terrible mistakes made by King Indra, you know, at the time of the sacrifice that Maharaj Prithu is organizing. And just to repeat, you know, these personalities who made these gross mistakes in life, every time there was an intervention of a devotee. So for example, in the case of Daksha, when he fell because of his pride, who intervened? Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva took corrective measures. Then Lord Brahma, you know, became the mediator. In the case of Dhruva, who intervened? Narad Muni. His mother, firstly, Mother Suniti guided him to the right path. And then Narad Muni intervened. But in the case of Dhruva, there was no mistakes though. No, there was little bit of, not pride, but maybe that Kshatriya pride, you know, that I want to be like this. That was there. But not for a 5-year-old boy, probably acceptable.
Ambition.
Ambition, he was ambitious. In the case of Anga, or Vena actually, in the case of Vena, you know, when he was a tyrant leader, who intervened?
The sages.
The sages intervened by killing him through the Vedic mantras, etc., etc. And in the current episode, in the case of Indra, when he is making these mistakes, who is intervening? Lord Vishnu is intervening, you know, to fix him up. So like that. So the pure devotees are intervening. Yeah? So very, very important point. This canto is again filled with, which I have already mentioned some names, filled with glorious leaders. Krishna tells us in Bhagavatam that, Bhagavad Gita, that evam parampara praptam imam raj rishiyo vidu sa kalenaha mata yogo nasta parantapa. You know? So I gave this knowledge to the saintly kings, the raj rishis, which seems to be have lost in the course of time. So I am repeating it to you, Arjuna. So he gave it to the raj rishis, to the saintly kings. Who are the saintly kings in this canto that we find, and whose lifetime is something that we can, you know, try to, you know, inculcate in our own life? Maharaj Prithu at the moment, you know, he is a glorious leader. King Vena was a glorious leader. Dhruva Maharaj was again a glorious leader. Uttanapad was not so bad. No, he was a good leader, except for the mistakes he made with his son Dhruva, not to give him love and affection. Yeah. So like that, we learn all those pastimes. Now in this canto again, they are glorious Matajis as well. They are wonderful ladies mentioned in this verse. Start with Anusuya, Mother Anusuya. Then we talk about Mother Sati, how she was dedicated to his wife, to her wife. And then also she was a little disobedient as well. So we learn from this pastime. Then we talk about glorious mother like Mother Suniti, how to guide the child to the right path. Mother Suniti is mentioned. And then at the moment, Mother Archie is being mentioned, who is Prithu Maharaj's wife, who is Goddess Lakshmi herself. So how to learn from this wonderful women in Canto 4. So you can see Canto 4 is so rich with all these pastimes going on. And why? If you go back to what I said initially, Bhagavatam, the focus is on bhakti. And all these great personalities are mentioned who have done the good things, and also the bad personalities from their mistakes, just to glorify the power of bhakti. Why bhakti is important? And if there is a slippage in our endeavor for bhakti, then and if you are sincere still, the Lord will intervene through Himself or through His pure devotees to lift us. Because to fall down is not a problem. To fall down is not a problem. But to remain down after falling is a problem. So how to again come up once we have fallen in any aspect? Whether it is the principles to follow, or whether it is Vaishnava aparad, or whatever it is, we have to rise. That's the main point. So, now, this particular section now, to zoom into Maharaj Prithu's pastime, chapter 15 to chapter 23, which is 8 chapters, is dedicated to the pastime of Maharaj Prithu. So just by seeing that the amount of chapters dedicated, you can understand the importance of this chapter. Now, King Prithu is being narrated in 8 chapters of Bhagavatam, in Canto 4. Again, couple of steps back into how King Prithu appears, and then we'll talk about Maharaj Prithu. So, after narrating Dhruva's pastime, Maitreya Muni then talks about King Anga. Why he wants to talk about King Anga? Because Maitreya Muni's focus was not so much on King Anga. Then after narrating Daksha pastime, then he narrates Uttanapad pastime, when Dhruva is about to come. So Maitreya Muni is talking about Uttanapad not so much because he wants to focus on Uttanapad, but more to focus on Dhruva. But he talks about the lineage. That Uttanapad was there and then Dhruva came. After finishing of Dhruva pastime, he jumps into the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, and in that lineage comes King Anga. King Anga, Anga's son was Vena, and we have seen that pastime, a couple of months ago in the Bhagavatam episodes. King Vena was a notorious leader, very tyrant, criminal, notorious in his behavior. So King Anga, seeing the nature of his son, was very remorse, he was very sad, but he gave us a very beautiful lesson. Then his final realization before leaving home was that actually a good son is a problem, a bad son is a blessing. That's an amazing realization, amazing perception of a reality. A good son is a problem, a bad son is a blessing. Why? Because when you have a good son in the family, you will be attached to the son. You will not be so dedicated to the Lord. Everything will go towards the son. But when you have a bad son like Vena, then it is a great source of detachment. We can just leave him aside and then go and carry on our Krishna consciousness. Now, one fundamental point here, that a misconception that sometimes we as devotees have, then it is not, when we say we have to be detached from material things, including our family, detachment does not mean absence of emotions. Detachment does not mean absence of emotions. Detachment means that we are not dependent on the emotions in making the decisions. There's a big difference between the two. So, for example, as parents, we know that there are two things that our kids need. Every parent knows this. Some learn the hard way, some learn the easy way. There are two things that a child needs when he's growing up. One is love, which is emotion, of course. And the other one is discipline. It's a matter of love and discipline. Now, where we struggle is how to balance the two. When to love and when to discipline. So, again, if you see in Dhruva's pastime, what he is looking from King Uttanapad, his father, is just love, some emotions. He wants to sit on the lap of his father, as simple as that. Now, there is the child's rights, and as a father, he also has to give. But out of his, too much affection for his wife, Surichi, he doesn't give that love and affection to Dhruva. So Bhagavatam doesn't derive the concept of love and affection. It says that Dhruva needed that. As a child growing up, he needs it from his father. So the challenge is not with love or not with discipline, but the challenge is how to balance the two. And that is an art in itself. And again, Srila Prabhupada writes very elaborately, in this section of Bhagavatam, in the King Prithu's pastime, because Bhagavatam says that Prithu Maharaj was an exemplary father to his citizens. And therefore Prabhupada takes that point to explain how one should be a parent. From a psychological point of view, through psychology study, we find that there are four types of parenting. And we will not go into depth in each of them, but just to give you an overview again. There are four types of parenting. And not that I'm an expert in any of them, but just from what I have heard and read. The first type of parenting is permissive. Permissive. You just permit the child to do whatever they want to do. Permissive. Example, Dhrishtarashtra. Whatever Duryodhana wants to do, just let him do. Very, very permissive. Now, if you look at Dhrishtarashtra with the point of the style of parenting and attachment and detachment, Dhrishtarashtra is making decisions for Dhruva based on attachment to their emotions. Whatever he wants to give. Very permitting and dependent on the emotions. If I correct him, how will he react? How will he feel bad? So, fully dependent, fully attached. Whereas what he should have done is removed himself from the emotions and then made the decision for him. So being still attached to Duryodhana in a loving way, but not making decisions based on emotions. You with me? So very permissive. The other type of parenting is very neglectful parenting. So not only permitting what the child wants to do, but even being unaware what are the needs of the child. Example, Uttanapa. Very neglectful parenting. Oblivious to the needs of Dhruva Maharaj, enjoying himself as the king with his queen. Oblivious. So very neglectful parenting. And this is not necessarily only from a Vedic point of view. These four styles of parenting are there in the modern arena today. You go and Google, you will find it. Yeah. But we can relate it to Vedic literatures as well, because we can resonate with it. Yeah. So permissive parenting and then very neglectful parenting. The third style of parenting is very authoritarian. Very authoritarian. Authoritarian means that we want the child to do what we want to do. Full stop. Nothing more. Example. Prahlad Maharaj. Pada. Hiranyakashipu. Authoritarian. Whatever I want to do, the child has to do. So that's also wrong. And then the fourth style of parenting, it is said, is authoritative. Authoritative not in a negative connotation, but more showing that love and discipline to the child. Authoritative in the sense of discipline and very, very playful in the times of love. So the four styles of parenting there. Now, if you want to know more about this, Prabhupada writes in detail in these sections of Bhagavatam. So go and figure it out. Canto 4 is full of things that we can resonate with. I had mentioned it to you. So like that. So, just to finish off that flow of the episode. So, when Dhruva Maharaj's pastime is over, then Maitreya Muni talks about King Angar and King Vena. And then when Vena is continuing to be a very tyrant leader, then the kings remove him, which we saw through mantras. Upon the removal of King Vena, there was an anarchy in the kingdom. There was a predominant increase, in the religious activities, because there was no leader. So at that point in time, the sages chained King Vena's dead body. And when they chained his thighs, they produced or they extracted all the ill that was sitting in his dead body and produced Bahuka. And then they chained his arms to produce Maharaj Prithu and Mother Archi, which is what we are reading at the moment. Yeah. So this is all coming from this pastime. So this is how Maharaj Prithu, beginning of Maharaj Prithu is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that he comes from the body of Vena. Now, what are the lessons to be learned in this particular pastime of Maharaj Prithu? There are many, but we'll highlight some of them in the next 15 minutes. Initially, for the chapters that we have read so far, Srila Prabhupada explains that Maharaj Prithu is a Shakti Avesha avatar. Shakti Avesha avatar means that he is the empowered extension of the Lord. And Prabhupada goes at length, to narrate how to determine whether somebody is God or not. Because many times there are many imposters, no, proclaiming themselves as God. So Prabhupada gives us beautiful criteria in terms of how to determine whether somebody is God or not. No? And that comes in that chapter when Maharaja Smriti's appearance is mentioned. No? So Srila Prabhupada gives us four criteria. Firstly, he said for somebody to be accepted as God, criteria number one is that there should be a scriptural reference. Should be mentioned in the scriptures that this personality will appear at this point in time. So it is ready, it is scriptural. No, it's not just some somebody's own view. So it's scriptural. Secondly, it should be through. Actually, let me tell you the past tense of Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada. He, at one time, when he was lecturing to his to the assembly, he said, and he was talking about this point. He said that for us to accept somebody as God, there must be a scriptural reference. So he was asking the audience, what do you think, what is the barometer that you will use to decide whether somebody is God or not? So people in the audience, were giving their own views and all that, and Srila Prabhupada was, you know, saying, no. And Srila Prabhupada finally said, you know, that the way to accept somebody is God is because, the way we accept Krishna as God is because Bhagavad Gita is saying Krishna is God. And that's why we accept Krishna as God. You know. Bhagavad Gita is saying Krishna is God. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, I am God, so we accept Krishna as God. Full stop. And everybody was cut. So then when we fast forward, after some time, when he was lecturing at another venue, he asked the same question. How do we accept? How do we accept? Kids, respect the flowers, okay? Don't put it in the floor. How do we accept Krishna as God? And there was one gentleman who was sitting in the class, who was also sitting in the previous class, who went here, Srila Prabhupada said that the way to accept Krishna is God is because Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, I am God, so we accept him as God. So he was quite, picky, he just wanted to very voluntarily give the answer because he knew he had the right answer. So he immediately put his hand up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, the way that we accept Krishna as God is because Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita that I am God, so therefore he is God. Srila Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita is your literature, I don't believe it. Bhagavad Gita is your book. I don't believe that he is God. How do I accept he is God? And the devotee was stunned. Because Prabhupada has given his answer previously, which he himself is now negating. So Srila Prabhupada said that we accept Krishna as God, not only because Bhagavad Gita is saying it, but also because of our personal experiences. Because of our personal experiences. If somebody is God, he should be able to manifest his divinity that makes changes in our life, and we have got that personal experiences that we are relating to God. So not just scriptural based, but also personal experiences of some connection with the Lord. Now, whether it's through the books or through our own sadhana or through our own Krishna consciousness growth, etc. So Krishna is there for us. We know that. Something is telling us that Krishna is God. So personal experiences. And then he gives two more points. In his purpose, he says that that personality's bodily characteristics should also prove that he is God. When the Lord comes, he has got all these marks on his body, like the conch shell, the lotus flower, etc. So those bodily features should be present. And then the last one is that his activities should also prove that he is God. He should be able to do divine activities. Through his divine activities, we are getting personal experiences. And his divine activity should be at that level. He should be also be able to do extraordinary activities. So four criteria. Firstly, there should be scriptural reference. Two, his activities should prove that he is God. Divine activities. Three, his bodily characteristics should prove that he is God. Fourth, that we have got the personal experiences that he is also God. So four things. In this combination, if they are ticked off, then you know that person is God. Now, when Maharaj Prithu appears, just to move forward now, when Maharaj Prithu appears, there are various demigods who appear on the scene and start offering him the gifts that they hold. So for example, Vayu will offer him something to do with water. Chandra will offer him something that's beautiful. Indra will offer him, you know, some water and something like that. So all these great personalities, the demigods, are offering him various gifts. And the Bhagavatam lists many of them. Then Srila Prabhupada explains to us, you know, that what we learn from this pastime is that the demigods are showing us that Krishna is the Bhokta Ram Jagata Prasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, you know, and everything is done for my benefit. You know, and I am your best well-wisher, Surdam Sarva Bhutana, Nyatva Mam Santim Rachati. Anybody knowing this is peaceful. So the demigods offering all these gifts to Krishna, to Prithu Maharaj, symbolizes that they are aware that, you know, everything is for the pleasure of the Lord. So when we do yajna, when we do sacrifices, we should know that Lord Vishnu is the Prajapati. You know, he is the benefactor of all. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So that is demonstrated in that pastime. And then we again move forward, and then we see that when Prithu Maharaj grows up and becomes a king, you know, the land, Mother Earth, Bhumi Devi, is withholding from producing the grains for the citizens. So there is lack of food, you know, scarcity, there is no rain. So Prithu Maharaj gets very angry at Mother Earth, at Bhumi Devi, not for producing. Now again, beautiful lessons to be learned that Srila Prabhupada explains in his papers, in this particular episode. You know, that when Maharaj Prithu finally chases, you know, Mother Earth, she becomes humble, she explains why she is not producing. And the reason she gives is that at the moment there is lack of grains for the citizens is because of the irreligious activities that has been done before your time, you know, of your lineage. You know, when King Vena was there, he was so tyrant and so arrogant and so irreligious that led me now to withheld all the grains and the seeds and all that. And therefore I am not able to produce. So it's not my fault, it's just a karmic reaction in the citizens. So therefore, you know, you do this and then milk me out, and therefore I will produce again. So Srila Prabhupada in our modern times and modern application explains that there is no shortage of land. This modern concept that there is shortage of land is not true. Because he said that when he was traveling, and that continues to be the case today, when we are traveling, we see there is vast amount of land there that is just there. So this phenomenon of shortage of land is not true. The problem is not shortage of land. The problem is misappropriation of land. The land is being misappropriated. Citizens are living in one compact area and the price is being inflated by those who want to make money. One problem. Two, where land is out in the suburbs, you know, out in the bush, they are being used for the wrong reasons. Such as grazing the cows so that the cows can be killed for the beef industry. Vast amount of crops, corns, grains are being fed to the bulls and the cows just so that the beef industry can survive. So total misappropriation of land. And because of that, there is shortages of food. Everybody is running after organic food, but there is none. Or if there are, it's just too expensive to afford. So, on this context, if you want to know about, you know, misappropriation of land or how land should be utilized, Srila Prabhupada gives abundant of, you know, beautiful lessons out of it. That there should be focus on agriculture and crop protection. That's what the leaders should do. They will be ample food. Like that. Then, at this particular kancha, which is today's verse, we see that Maharaj Prithu had started, you know, Ashwamedha Yagya, you know, sacrificial of the horses for the purpose of, you know, benedictions. And after sacrificing 99 horses, you know, when he's about to sacrifice the 100th horse, you know, King Indra comes and he steals that particular horse and runs away. And then Maharaj Prithu's son goes, you know, and retrieves that horse, etc., etc. But the lesson to be learned out of that is when Maharaj Prithu is unable to complete the sacrifice and is angry at Indra, and the sages tell him to, you know, finish off Indra, sacrifice Indra himself in the fire. Lord Brahma appears and counsels Maharaj Prithu and tells him that this kind of endeavor, you know, is not necessarily correct. It's better to perform bhakti yoga, etc. And when seeing that Maharaj Prithu was very submissive to Lord Brahma in giving up his endeavor to complete the sacrifice and forgive Indra completely, Lord Vishnu becomes very pleased with Prithu Maharaj. So Lord Vishnu appears at the sacrificial arena, and that is the title of this chapter. The title of this chapter is then Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena. So when Prithu Maharaj is trying to do the sacrifice, Indra comes and disturbs. When the sages tell Prithu Maharaj to finish off Indra, put him in the sacrifice itself, Lord Brahma appears to say, don't do this. No, better to do bhakti yoga rather than all these sacrifices and all that. And then when Prithu Maharaj is submissive to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu gets pleased. More, rather than getting pleased from the yajna, he gets pleased from Prithu Maharaj's submissiveness. And then comes on the scene. Seeing Lord Vishnu appear, Prithu Maharaj starts offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. So this particular chapter now, starting yesterday, which was verse 23, we see that Lord Maharaj Prithu is offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. And what's the prayer that he offered in verse 23? I'll read that quickly and then we'll stop for questions. My dear Lord, you are the best of the demigods. That's his prayer. Who can offer benedictions? Why therefore should any learned persons ask you for benediction, men for the living entities bewildered by the modes of nature? Such benedictions are available automatically, even in the lives of living entities suffering in hellish conditions. My dear Lord, you can certainly bestow magic into your existence, but I do not wish to have such benedictions. That's his first prayer. In other words, in summary, he is saying that you are the giver of liberation, but I do not want that liberation. In this prayer, then what does he want? If I do not want liberation, then what do I want? Then he tells, which is the verse of the day. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence. I do not want that liberation. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I do not want that liberation because there is no beverage of your lotus feet. So what do I want? I want the benediction of at least 1,000,000 years. For thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. So after negating benediction, liberation, he now wants millions of years, which is a figurative speech, of course. In other words, what he says is that I want to hear more and more and more about your glories. And in the next prayer, tomorrow, which you will see, which is very interesting. It's one of the first times that I've come across this. You know, every time we hear about the lotus feet of the Lord, that the Lord's eyes are like lotus, Lord's feet is like lotus, Lord's hands are like lotus, etc., etc. Now, Prithu Maharaj drops in a very, very interesting analogy maybe, about an addition to the lotus feet of the Lord, which you will see today. I'll read it, but of course, Bhakta Prabhu will explain that tomorrow. What he says that, my dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees, hear this out. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of pure devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet. So he adds in the saffron dust of the aroma of the lotus feet. So very many times we see the feet being compared to lotus, but Prithu Maharaj adds that extra flavor, if you like, extra masala, which is the saffron dust, the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet. And that is, he says is purifying. So that we will see tomorrow in terms of how the prayers continues. And the prayers goes on until, I think, verse 31 from memory. Goes until 31. So, Lord Maharaj Prithu's prayers to Lord Vishnu. And then we see how Indra also becomes. And then we see how Prithu Maharaj forgives Indra for his mistakes. So, I'll summarize and then I'll take questions. So maybe I'll do Ramanuja Acharya Pastam. I don't know. Let's just see. So initially we spoke about about how Bhagavatam is flowing, the flow of the Bhagavatam. It's a discussion between Vyasadeva and us. Then there are nested conversations between Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami to the sages of Naivisharanya, and then Maitreya Muni to Vidura. And then we saw that Vyasadeva was being corrected or being advised by Narad Muni that the Vedas are too focused on the four Purusha Arthas, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha, whereas you know, you now focus on Bhakti, which is what Bhagavatam is. Now in Bhagavatam, you know, in Canto 4, some part of Canto 3 and Canto 4 is the discussion between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. And here we learn pastimes from which we can learn lessons that we can easily resonate with, because it is directly applicable to us. Because now when we come to Krishna consciousness and we start reading Srila Prabhupada's books, now there are two buckets of information, if you like. Now, one bucket of information are, you can almost call them hard facts. They are not disputable. For example, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are four extensions of Krishna initially. There are three modes of material nature. There are five subject matters in the Bhagavata, in the Bhagavad Gita. These things are not disputable within the devotee circle. Any devotee will accept this as hard fact. I'm not talking about non-devotees for now. Yeah, devotees will accept this as hard fact. Where we tend to have little misconceptions, struggling to understand how to apply in our lives, are the other aspects of information which are more, not so much, maybe cultural, but more so about behavioral, the behavioral aspects of Krishna consciousness. How to behave ourselves at what point in time? Because the misconceptions that again we make are that, you know, that the virtues are categorical rather than contextual. What do I mean by that? For example, we, you know, we learn that we should be tolerant. But then we make the mistakes that the tolerance is the only virtue. Tolerance is definitely a virtue, but tolerance is not the only virtue. At times, other actions have to be taken. So for example, Lord Ram is very tolerant with everybody. But then he finishes off Ravana. Now if he is tolerant with Ravana, he should not kill Ravana. Now Arjuna is tolerant with the Kauravas. But then Arjuna kills the Kauravas. So tolerance is there, but at some point corrective actions also has to be taken. Now, Lord Shiva is tolerant with Daksha. But then he fixes Daksha up at the end. So like that. So now, this behavioral aspects is something that is very difficult to digest at times. So Canto 4 therefore lists and gives us lessons about all these beautiful characteristics. You know, how to be tolerant, how to be forgiving, how to be a good leader, how to be a good parent, how to be a good son, etc., etc. How to be ambitious, Dhruva Maharaj. You know, how to be determined, Dhruva Maharaj, etc., etc. All these pastimes are in, behavioral aspects are mentioned in elaborate details by Srila Prabhupada in the purpose of Canto 4. So Canto 4 is very rich for our own behavioral development of Krishna consciousness, if you like. So therefore, the focus of my lecture today was more not so to list all the details about each of these behaviors, but more to give you an overview and almost like an advertisement, you know, to go and read Canto 4 in your own time. Whichever part you are struggling with, we are struggling with, there is an answer in particular Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to help us with that. I will stop here, and I think I will skip the other things because I don't have time, but I can take some questions. No comments. Yes, I agree. That's a beautiful question. Yeah, I agree. One wants to know about Sri Ramanujacharya. Past time. Okay, I'll quickly talk about it and then we'll stop because I had prepared something on it. Yeah, okay. I'll take one more question, then I'll come to Ramanujacharya and then we'll stop. Yes, sir.
So all these things happened. Vidura and my friend had the conversation and all that happened. And then yesterday captured all that?
As I said, Bhagavatam is not in a chronological order. See, no, it's not so much about what happened when there is important, but more the lessons that is to be learned. Because it is quite unique, because it starts with Vyasadeva speaking. And then there are all these episodes happening. Because the you know, if you want to know it in a more chronological way, then Bhagavatam, you know, is coming, or the Vedas, including the Bhagavatam, you know, is coming from Lord Krishna himself. Vedas is coming from Krishna. He gives the knowledge. Krishna gives the knowledge initially to Lord Brahma, because he was the first created being. Lord Brahma gives it to his son, Narad Muni. Narad Muni gives this knowledge to Vyasadeva, who is Krishna himself. Vyasadeva gives it to his son, Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva gives this knowledge to Parikshit Maharaj, And when Sukadev Goswami was giving this knowledge to Parikshit Maharaj, sitting in that assembly was Sutta Goswami. So when Sukadev Goswami is giving to Parikshit Maharaj, Sutta Goswami is also listening. So then subsequently Sutta Goswami gives this knowledge to the sages of Naimisharanya, which is headed by Sonata Rishi. So that's more like a chronological way. But Bhagavatam is more nested. It's hard, at least for me, to figure out what happened and who talks when and what is the order. But in any case, as I said, the focus of Bhagavatam is not about the chronology, but it's more about bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. And when you see Srila Prabhupada's writings, even in Bhagavad Gita, in one sense, there's a storyline, of Drishvastra, Uvacha, Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Swami Veda Yudhava. There's a question that Drishvastra is asking Sanjaya in the first verse of Bhagavad Gita. After my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled at the place of Vimas, desiring to fight, oh Sanjaya, what did they do? That's the question asked. Now Sanjaya gives that answer right at the last verse of chapter 18. So it has taken 18 chapters for Sanjaya to answer this Drishtarashtra's question. And what's the answer he gives at the right at the end of Bhagavad Gita, the very, very final verse? That, oh Drishtarashtra, wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there will be victory, there will be opulence, there will be happiness, etc., etc. Now in between Drishtarashtra and Sanjaya is speaking, there is a nested conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So, and when you look at Srila Prabhupada's purpose, it's not so much about now this has happened, now this will happen, now this will happen, now this will happen. That you will not find. That you will find in Gurujan Prabhu's surrender unto me, or Subodhini, chronological order of what actually Krishna is saying. When you look at Prabhupada's writing, rather than going horizontal of what is happening, Srila Prabhupada almost goes vertical of every page of every verse, there is bhakti. Every page, there is bhakti. In every purport, he will highlight the glory of bhakti. So his focal is on bhakti, which is what Bhagavatam is also doing. Forget sarva dharman parityaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja. Forget all the other dharmas. Jnana dharma, jnana yoga, karma yoga, astanga yoga, all this forget. Just surrender unto me, bhakti yoga. So every pages of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada takes the opportunity to glorify bhakti. Similarly, every pages of Bhagavatam, there is something to bring the bhakti out of us. That's the whole purpose of the episode. Nothing more than that. Bhakti. Focal point on bhakti. Is that satisfying for today? Okay. So, 2 minutes, maybe 5 minutes. Now, Srila Ramanujacharya. Today is his disappearance day. So, Srila Ramanujacharya fits in the grand plan of the law, like how we make plans, for our 1 hour planning, 2 hour planning, 1 day planning, 1 week planning, maximum maybe 1 year planning. And the Lord makes, multi-century plannings, 2500 year planning if you like. So how does it start? It starts, and I spoke about this last time as well, so I'm kind of repeating what I said some time ago. At that time it was, I think, Ramanujacharya's appearance day. So I'm getting his blessings big time. So, about 2500 years ago, when there was rampant killing of the animals under the pretext of the Vedic literatures, that cow killing, animal killing is okay. There was rampant killing of the slaughter of the animals. Then Krishna comes as Lord Buddha and then saying there is no Vedas, there is no God. Stop this animal killing. So, Lord Buddha, who is Krishna himself, incarnation of Krishna himself, gives us the doctrine of voidism. Sunyavadi. There is no God. Sunya. Prabhupada's pranam mantra visa. Nirvishesha sunyavadi. Paschatya desatari. What does that mean? The Srila Prabhupada defeats the doctrine of nirvishesha. Shesh means form. Nirvishesha means no form. So he defeats that the Lord has no form. Nirvishesha. Sunyavadi. He defeats the doctrine of sunyavadi. That the Lord, everything is zero. Paschatya desatari. Then he delivers the people of the Western world as well. Paschatya means paschim. Uttar dakshim, pura paschim. Like that. So paschatya desatari in Western. Paschim means Western in West. In Sanskrit. So paschatya desatari. So Buddha gave us the principle, the doctrine of no God. Zero God. Everything is zero. Sunyavadi. And there is no Vedas. So stop putting this cause. You with me? Because you asked the question. Yeah? Okay. So then comes Shankaracharya about 1200 years ago, and Shankaracharya says that he gives the philosophy of Advaita. Advaita philosophy. Dvaita means two, Dvaita. Advaita means not two, one. So everything is one. So when Lord Buddha gave us the doctrine of everything is zero, Shankaracharya gives us the doctrine of everything is one. You are God, I am God, everything is God. The doctrine of one second, just let me please, then I'll come to you. No, so Shankaracharya gives the doctrine of non-dualism. Everything is God. Then comes Ramanujacharya, which is what we are talking about today, about 1,000 years ago. And he said that yes, it is true that everything is one, but there is a difference as well. Everything is one, but there is a little difference as well. You know? So, for example, if I was to ask Krishna, you know, I will say, how are you? Right? Now, although we are philosophically aware that there is a soul, which is Krishna, people on the audio might think I am talking about Lord Krishna. Now, I am talking about Bhakta Krishna here. Yeah? So, when I am talking to Bhakta Krishna, now I am saying, but how are you? Then I am... If I was to apply the technical philosophy, you know, then I would say, how are you and how is your body? But we don't talk like that. So I'm aware, I'm cognizant that there is one, but I'm also cognizant that there is two, that there's a body and there's a soul. But from a more practical point of operation, then I'm just saying, how are you? No, we will not say, how are you and how's your hand, how's your leg, how's your eyes, how are you? So there's oneness, but there's a difference as well. So this Ramanujacharya is, you know, Vasishtha Advaita philosophy. You know, there is oneness, but there is a difference. Then, about 500 to 600 years ago, Madhvacharya appeared, you know, who more emphatically refuted the doctrine of oneness, you know, of Shankaracharya. He was more emphatic. He said, nothing is zero, nothing is one, everything is two. Everything is two. Now, there is Vishnu, which is the soul, and there is Prakriti. Now, this is the material nature, is his body. So there is Vishnu, there is body. So, no, Dvaita philosophy. No? Suddha Dvaita philosophy, I think it was called. Suddha Dvaita philosophy. No? Pure dualism, everything is two. Now, then we know, no? If you so the Lord started this plan 2500 years ago, coming as Lord Buddha, to say everything is zero. Shankaracharya came, which is incarnation of Lord Shiva, to say that everything is one. Ramanujacharya came to say everything is one, but there is still some difference. Madhvacharya comes and then says nothing is zero, nothing is one, everything is two. And then the Lord comes again as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to complete that many centuries plan to say that everything is one and everything is two. There is simultaneous oneness and difference, which is what we call is Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva. The tattva, the truth is that everything is one and yet everything is different. And then Prabhupada gives us this example, so many examples, that if Krishna is the ocean, then we are the drop in the ocean. So in terms of quality, we are one with the Lord. You know, we are qualitatively one with the Lord. The chemical composition of the drop of water is same as the chemical composition of the ocean of water. They're same in quality. But in quantity, it's a drop, the other one is a big, vast ocean. So Krishna is that ocean, we are that drop of ocean. Or we are the particle of the gold, and Krishna is the gold mine. So the particle of the gold has got the same composition as the gold mine, but it's just a particle. It's not the gold mine. So Krishna is the gold mine, we are the gold particle. So there is a oneness in quality, difference in quantity. No? Krishna tells us that mamai amsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Mamai amsha. The living entities are my amsha, my particles, like the gold particle. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and completes the whole cycle to say everything is one and simultaneously different. So that's how Ramanujacharya fits into that multi-century planning of the Lord. Yeah, to remove the rampant killing of the animals at that age. Krishna, you had a question. Another Bhakta Krishna. There's two Bhakta Krishnas here. Yes. Do it louder, please. Yes. Correct. Yes. Yeah. It's one and two. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it's one and two. Yeah. Not three. He says there's one and there's two at the same time. Not three. Yeah. Don't invent your own philosophy today. Yes. Last question. We have to stop. Yes. Which, what do I do, sorry?
Can you just tell us one story about
Srila Ramanujacharya? I don't think so. Not that I am too well versed with the story, nor I have the time for that today. Sorry, hi everyone. I think we'll go to stop here because it's 9 o'clock and I need to go to the office. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Ramanujacharya ki, I go to the office.